Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Hey, we got a big show for you here on this Monday. We're going to pack a lot of information in. I got former Representative Kerry White coming up later on around 9:40, 9:45 or so. Apparently today is the last day to comment on that federal designation that they're trying to push in southwest Montana. And he's very concerned that it could impact your access, impact potential mining in the area as well. So today is the last day to comment. So I know Kerry White's going to call in later this hour of the show. Plus, we were going to kick off the 9 o'clock hour with Representative Jerry Schillinger out of Circle, Montana, to give us kind of the latest information that he's hearing when it comes to this proposed homeless shelter or a warming shelter in Lewistown, Montana. He was going to join us on the phone lines, but it actually turns out he's going to be able to join us in studio. But he's driving safe, so it's still going to take him a little bit longer. He was going to call him, but even better to have him in studio. So, Jerry, drive safe. We'll see you here shortly for an update on the homeless shelter proposed in Lewistown, Montana. First, so we got John Jackson, the Joker from Twitter, in the house with us. John, I thought one of our friends in the Flathead was going to fill me in here, but it's actually one of our listeners in Great Falls. Apparently, Ichiro Suzuki was an outfielder, not a pitcher. See, I couldn't even remember if he played for the Florida Marlins or I thought he played for Seattle. I got that right. But apparently, he was an outfielder, not a pitcher. So think about this. For those of you who haven't heard this story here, Ichiro Suzuki threw a shutout game against a bunch of high school girls. And he's not even a pitcher. He was an outfielder here. But it was all for a good cause. He's trying to encourage more girls to take part in the sport of baseball back in his home country of Japan. But he didn't let up on him. He threw a shutout.
He didn't hold up on him. You know, he just gave him the heat. I mean, and you imagine an outfielder has to have an arm to be able to, you know, throw that thing from way out there in the outfield. He's got to have some heat.
Yeah, so thanks to a listener in Great Falls. Yeah, Ichiro Suzuki is actually an outfielder, not a pitcher, and yet pitched a shutout game against a bunch of high school girls. Meanwhile, Megan Rapinoe and the U.S. women's soccer team didn't even defeat a team of high school 15-year-olds in Texas recently, and they were not holding back in that game either. By the way, the U.S. women's soccer team was not holding back. But yet the very same people that want to destroy women's sports and take away opportunities for girls in sports are the same people that don't want to acknowledge simple biological differences anymore.
Well, I see that in the running stuff that I do here in Montana. You see, now there are some girls here in the state of Montana, high school girls, that are just outstanding, just incredible, incredible distance runners. You know, are going to college on athletic scholarship and all that. But you put their times up against the boys, they're middle to the back of the pack of the boys.
Interesting, yeah. And so you start to remove biology from the equation, you remove women and girls from sports. That's what that fight is all about. All right, well, we'll talk more. Lots of topics we can cover with John Jackson, the Joker from Twitter, coming up right after this. And then when Representative Schillinger arrives from Circle, he'll join us.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide, this is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, let's jump right into it here. John Jackson, the Joker from Twitter, joining us for a quick few minutes here as we kick off our statewide show. And then I think not only are we going to hear from Representative Jerry Schillinger out of Circle, but I just got word that apparently State Senator Dan Bartel out of Lewistown is going to call in here in a few minutes as well. So looking forward to that. John Jackson, in the meantime, the big stories over the Thanksgiving weekend. On Friday's program, we re-aired one of our best of shows where we focus on the gang violence, the crime, the drug cartels. And you nailed it a few weeks ago when we were talking about the youth gangs. And, well, why are they doing it? Why is this happening in Montana? And you nailed it when you said, because they can. Because the message has gone out that if you're a criminal, you can do it and you can get away with it. And especially if you're a kid, if you're under 18, tell us just how this story out of New York City is crazy, but it kind of gives us a window of what's also happening here in Montana when it comes to retail theft as well.
Well, New York Post reported the other day that in 1 year, in 2022, this is not even this latest year of 2022, retailers in New York City lost $4.4 billion to, and they call it, organized shoplifting rings. They're not talking about the individuals just going in and grabbing makeup. They're talking about those gangs that rush in and sack the store and rush out and nobody stops them.
And then oftentimes what I've heard is then they'll have like a bootleg store almost even right out front on the street corner where they then resell those same products at a much more much lower price, and then are getting cash for all of those items that they just stole from the storefront inside. But for people who think, that's just New York, that's just San Francisco, no, that is happening here in Montana, especially in these larger kind of corporate, some of these chain stores, for example, where, I mean, I know people that work at some of these places, and they say, we are not allowed to stop these shoplifters. We are supposed to just sit. So here you are working to make an honest day's living and collect a paycheck, and then you see the place just get robbed blind, and you can't do anything to stop it. I mean, what a slap in the face that is to working people in America.
But then you've pointed out, I've heard you point out before, that a company like Shields in Billings, they have a zero tolerance policy for that stuff.
They do a great job,
and
apparently.
You try to walk out of their place with any of their merchandise, and they're not only going to catch you, they're going to prosecute you, they're calling the cops, and you're getting arrested.
I would love it if I could interview like the head of their security or something, because what I've heard from my law enforcement friends is they're incredible, the way that they can almost spot somebody just by different things that you're doing. And maybe they may not want to expose it over the air, but they can tell by just like your body language and how you're acting within the store. They're like, oh, yep, that person's about to try to steal some stuff. And then they nab you right away. But that's good that they do that, because here's the deal. If they don't stop these people from committing these crimes, they encourage more of the crime to take place. So these retailers that don't crack down on crime, they're just as much to blame as these weak judges are for soft criminal sentences, because by not cracking down on it in your store, you are encouraging crime. And then, you know, like the broken windows theory, then these criminals think they can get away with more and more, and they can get more aggressive, and then you start to see the shootings, and you start to see even more violent behavior as well.
Well, you see what they're, a lot of times what they're taking advantage of is the multiple entries and exits to a store. If you say you're a grocery store, like say a typical Albertsons here in Montana has got three entries and exits right there. Well, they know that particularly on the side ones, nobody's watching. There's no cashiers. There's no employee is watching that. So that's how they do it. A big way you could stop all that is just have one entry and exit, and then you have one security guard right there. I mean, that would cut your shoplifting by 80% right there.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I've noticed some of the department stores have now done that, where, you know, like we were driving to one, I won't name the department store, but on the west end of Billings, and my kid was like, why don't we go to this entrance over there? I said, oh, no, they shut that one down. Oh, why'd they shut that one down? Well, you know, let me tell you, son. let grandpa tell you a story.
You know? my daughter will walk in there, and she says she immediately gets the eye from all these people. And she talked to somebody, and sure enough, it's because for the individual shoplifters, that's who they're looking at, is the teenage girls.
Oh, really?
Particularly in some of these clothing, makeup, beauty type of shops, that's who are their shoplifters.
Well, that makeup is expensive stuff. I've heard the same thing from, let's just say, my friends in retail, that, yeah, that's one of the big things, that the makeup sections will get raided a lot. But look how pricey that stuff is. Well, going back to this whole, you know, Ichiro Suzuki pitching a shutout game against a group of high school girls, why do you think these big beauty stores and makeup manufacturers are supporting this transgender agenda? Think about how much money they make off of the cosmetics industry. Imagine if you can now double your customer base by getting a bunch of dudes to wear makeup too.
Oh, yeah, more people to use your product. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't know. Is it a Wu-Tang quote? Dollar bills, y'all? I mean, that's what they're seeing, you know.
It's just like they do to you out in Las Vegas. I mean, they are not at all bashful about using every single piece of their building structure and their architecture and everything to keep you in that casino, keep you drinking, and keep you gambling. Right?
Yeah.
They're not concerned at all with the morality of it. They want your money.
That's right. Yeah. Which is fascinating, by the way, because the University of Montana at a recent commencement ceremony, they actually had their keynote speaker at the graduation ceremony was a big donor to Planned Parenthood and some of these liberal causes. He has a background in the cosmetics industry. Well, it's like, well, of course you would support this transgender agenda and all this other stuff because more money for you.
Cha-ching.
And then you give that money to the university and bada bing, bada boom, who's the graduation speaker?
Yeah, yeah, cha-ching, cha-ching.
The guy that, yeah, anyway, crazy
follow
stuff.
Follow the money.
Follow the money. All right, quick break, back with more Montana Talks right after this. Did you know
Montana is talking here. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Well, this is great. Well, Representative Jerry Schillinger made it. He is in the House from Circle, Montana. Plus, it looks like we've got State Senator Dan Bartel on the phone lines in Lewistown as well. Real quick, though, let's sneak in a phone call here from Grandpa Lou in Billings. He wanted to weigh in on the Ichiro Suzuki shutout game against the high school girls. Grandpa Lou, thanks for the call. What did you want to share?
Good morning, and thanks to both of you for all that you do. And the breaking news is that Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer changed his name to Melissa, and he dominated all the reindeer games for the girls. I just came across the wire, and I just wondered how sad.
The times they are changing now. I've seen that joke on social media before as we enter the holidays. Yeah, that's a classic. All right. Well, Grandpa Lou, thanks for calling in. Great to hear from you. Representative Jerry Schillinger now in the House with us all the way from Circle. Jerry, it's great to see you. And I'll tell you what, I always love it when we get a phone call from you, especially when you're sitting on your tractor or you're on a combine in the middle of work and you say, you know what, I just had to call in. But good to see you here face to face.
Well, it's great to be with you, Aaron, and with your listeners across Montana. You have a great program and just presents a wonderful forum for legislators or any citizen to participate in, so I really appreciate it.
Well, it's your phone calls that make the show, you know, and I say not just you, but all of our listeners out there. That's what really makes the show great. You gave me a phone call last week. I was mentioning this story. I saw a KRTV story about a proposed warming shelter in Lewistown, basically a homeless shelter being proposed in Lewistown, and man, I was thinking, what's the story here? Because it sounds like a lot of folks in the Lewistown area are opposed to this, and for very good reasons, because we've seen in places like Kalispell. In fact, they even had the mayor of Kalispell apparently show up at a meeting in Lewistown and kind of warn folks and say, hey, look, basically what we've been saying is if you build it, they will come. We all want to take care of the homeless people that come upon a bad situation in our own communities, but the concern is that you start building these shelters, you encourage the out-of-state, transient, oftentimes criminal element to move in. But you called me and said apparently you went to the meeting or you've been asking some questions as a state lawmaker.
Well, that's right, Aaron. And when I heard about, actually the way I heard about the meeting was in a conversation with Senator Bartel. We were visiting about some other issues, and he mentioned this meeting coming up, and so I said, well, I've got to go to that and find out more, because one of the things that he stated was part of the impetus for this proposed shelter is a $5 million amendment that got added to House Bill 5, which is supposed to be just a maintenance fund for state-owned structures, but Representative Hopkins somehow got that amended into House Bill 5. $500 million bill altogether, House Bill 5, so this is the $5 million bill that got amendment that got added to it. There were some attempts in the Senate by Carl Glimm to amend that out of House Bill 5 when it was in their Finance and Claims Committee. And unfortunately four Republicans joined the Democrats to kill that amendment, so it stayed in. But I would just go... before the meeting, getting into the meeting, I was just was reminded while I was on the way up here of a conversation I had with Budget Director Osmondson here a few weeks ago. He reminded me that the legislature may may appropriate money, but the executive doesn't have to spend it. And I would just encourage him in this case that the budget director and the governor step in and not spend this $5 million. It doesn't have to be.
That's very interesting because, yeah, you told me last week and you said you were going to do some more digging on it, but your concern was that potentially the state had appropriated some money to fund warming shelters like this one. So now maybe some folks in Lewistown saw the dollar bills and said, hey, why don't we build one here using state funds? But, yeah, apparently the governor's budget director, that would be very encouraging news for the folks who are opposed to this in Lewistown, if they can say, hey, yeah, there might be funding available, but that doesn't mean we need to grant that funding. That doesn't mean that anybody who comes and tries to build a project is going to be able to build a project.
Well, that's right, Aaron. And actually, one of the things you had in the program this morning about this talked about housing authority in Bozeman made me wonder if that isn't also been inspired by this $5 million that's dangled out there by the state. Because nonprofits, I'm not sure about individuals, but nonprofits for sure can apply for these funds. And to get back to the Lewistown meeting, when I went there, I was thinking that, well, a warming shelter, that's like a bus stop almost. You stop in, get warmed up, and you move on. But when I got there, I found out that what was actually proposed was like a 50-bed overnight unit where the shelters are supposedly only open for 12 hours. This one is supposed to be 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., I should say that way. And so they can come in and have dinner and go to bed and then get up, have breakfast, and then they've got to be out of there by 7 o'clock. So it's far more than just a place to get in and get warmed up.
In a 50-bed facility, when you first told me that, I was like, wow, that would be a big facility in a Missoula or in a Bozeman, let alone in a Lewistown, Montana. Well, let's take you to Lewistown. We've got State Senator Dan Bartel on the phone lines right now as well. Senator Bartel, thanks for calling in. And, what is the reaction that you're hearing from your constituents in Lewistown and in Fergus County?
Well, good morning, everyone. There's been a lot of reaction in town about having this warming shelter brought into town, and a large percentage of folks are against it, and that's what's going on here. There is a small contingency of people that believe that this is the way to help the homeless people, but what we're looking at is that a larger city might need a homeless shelter or warming hut. But in the smaller communities such as Lewistown, I just think that's really premature. I think we have to look at what other services, if we were to attract these people, could we provide to them, as an example, mental health, food, social services that don't necessarily require either one of those, medical care. And we haven't really looked at those types of support services to see whether a homeless shelter could work here. And yet we're applying for a grant, like Representative Schillinger said, they got snuck in on the seventh hour. And then, of course, in the Senate Finance and Claims, we tried to stop that. And I guess back to House Bill 5, just to talk a little bit on Jerry's statement, House Bill 5 is for infrastructure of state-owned facilities. It is not made to... The bill is not designed to give out grant money for non-state facilities. And that's where I'd like to talk about is some of the guidelines for this grant is allows that this grant money can be issued, and then after 5 years, after the project completion, then it doesn't have to be an emergency shelter. They have a way to get out of it. And so I don't agree with that. We need to put more money towards affordable and housing for the working class people, and we're sneaking this in there. And the other thing is the property that these shelters would be on would be private property and bought by nonprofit organizations. And I think it has to go through a lot of criteria in which to make this work. But once you start, like I think was mentioned earlier, it build and they will come. And you know, we don't need to do this. And also, this money would allow also for administrative costs and a few other things. And you know, if the grant, if there's $5 million in that money, and if there's that, it does require that there's community input. And I would hope that that we would be able to put in community input before this thing ever got moved here.
Yeah.
And I just want to say one more thing is there's over 200 foundations, public and private, in the state of Montana for homeless programs and services. And then countrywide, the United States government spends over $35,000 per year for homeless people. And we have the structure in place to do what we can to help these homeless people, and but one of them shouldn't be in the Lewistown. But I will tell you that right now, as part of the HEART initiative, DPHHS has submitted a waiver under the proposed tenancy support laws to where Medicaid and Medicare could pay for these warming shelters and homeless shelters. And I think that's wrong. I think we need to look at that. I think that in the larger cities, we do need to provide some of this, but in smaller communities, we don't.
Yeah.
So what's happening is we're blanketing the state, and when we need to target.
Well, if they do it in Lewistown, or if they propose one in Lewistown, what's stopping them from doing it in any other small towns across Montana and having the same type of recruitment of out-of-state transient effect as well? Senator Bartel made a really good point there about overwhelming other local city services if you were, you know, kind of recruit the transient community in by building one of these. Representative Schillinger, any other thoughts you want to share? We've got less than a minute before a break, and then I'll come back to you both of you after that as well.
I would just say, Aaron, related to that, and the point was made in Lewistown that not all for sure, but many of the people that will utilize these warming centers are people that need mental health help and services. And these small towns aren't equipped for that either. And many of the big towns aren't really even equipped for it, but they're better equipped for it. And so if we're really going to help those people, don't just give them a place to stay.
That's right. I think we all want to help those who are truly homeless, those who are truly in need. The question is how? How do we best do that? And, or are we just making the problem worse and creating more problems within these communities? All right. Well, we'll come back to the representative out of Circle and the senator out of Fergus County here right after this quick break. And then Kerry White is going to join us later on.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordland.
2023 has been challenging for farmers and ranchers. David Vidmar is an economist with Agricultural Economic Insights, and he shares more on some of the bigger stories of the year.
One of the big stories is declining net farm income. Big headline shocker there, but still historically high. So we've got to balance those two narratives. It's not been as good for all parts of the country. The Midwest and the Corn Belt have done really strong the last 3 years collectively. So 21, 22, 23 are the best three-run average that we've had since the 40s. So the best 3 years in most of our careers. Now, on the other side of the narrative, we have commodity prices that have trended lower, especially on corn the last few years. Another year of below trend line yields, and of course, interest rates. Really not necessarily the short-term rates that the Fed adjusts at their meetings, but we're really watching these long-term rates.
Volatility will likely continue into 2024.
Acreage, there's always an acreage reallocation, and one of the things that happened in 2023, we had a lot of corn acres and a little bit of soybean acres, and that's resulted in this imbalance in ending stocks. So corn ending stocks are above the long-run average, closer to 15% instead of the average of 13%. Soybeans are closer to 5 or 6%. 6% instead of a long-run average of 8. So we need to see some acreage reallocation. So producers are going to need to keep an eye on that relative price ratio and how that's going to impact their budgets.
He added that fertilizers came down a lot, and that's going to benefit corn budgets quite a bit. I'm Lane Nordland.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, back to it here with Montana Talks. I told you we're packing a lot of content in here on this Monday morning show. I got an email a few days ago from former Representative Kerry White, and many of you know Kerry White through his work with Citizens for Balanced Use. They fight to make sure you've got access to your so-called public land. You know, whenever the radical environmental groups in particular try to come in and close off a trail or close down your access road, if you're a disabled hunter that still wants to access your spot, or you like to go, you know, off-roading, or you got a snowmobile, they're a group that fights for you and your public land access. And anyway, he called into the show a while back talking about this proposed Missouri Headwaters Conservation Area. Anyway, for those of you who recall that conversation, today is the last day to comment, to give public comments on that proposed Missouri Headwaters Conservation Area. So he wants to get the word out one last time for folks. So we'll get to Kerry White here in just a couple of minutes, but also continuing this important conversation about our proposed homeless shelter in Lewistown, Montana, that's causing a lot of controversy. And as you're hearing on the show right now, if they can propose it there and potentially use state funds there, they can do it in your town as well. Back to State Senator Dan Bartel out of Lewistown. Senator Bartel, the big question I got, even from some listeners in Missoula, is who is proposing this? Because that KRTV story didn't really say which organization or which individual is pushing this or proposing this. It just kind of expressed some of the concerns.
Yes, well, I don't exactly know the name of the organizations, but it's some community members that believe that this is the avenue in which they should go to provide services to the homeless. But you know, the thing is the way that we're funding it is not right. It's wrong. And also, just to let your audience know that most of the homeless shelters that are within the state of Montana now are donated money. And so with this HEART initiative and this DPHHS waiver to allow Medicaid and Medicare to pay for these, that takes away from the communities that do want to support homeless shelters like they do in the bigger cities. And I just think that's the wrong way to do it, is use more tax dollars when we're already overburdened with tax dollars and our property taxes. I'm sure everybody's had to write the checks. It's been very painful. And here we do, we add more costs to government, which, where do they get their money is from us. But, and then the other thing real quick is we in Lewistown, we've already had some churches that provide assistance for the homeless people and people that may be dislodged for various reasons. And we have Salvation Army here. And so we handle them the way that we best can. And so it's not like we are pushing them out. We do have assistance here in the Lewistown area.
I figured that was the case, yes. Such great folks there and such a giving community. In fact, with tomorrow being Giving Tuesday, we're going to have a special program for tomorrow for Giving Tuesday. But you're right. So many people generously donate to existing programs to help the needy, to help the homeless. That's how, you know, organizations like Family Promise, the Montana Rescue Mission, so many other organizations across the state survive and help out. Senator Bartel, thanks for calling in this morning. Great to get your insight.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
All right. Representative Jerry Schillinger, any other thoughts from your standpoint before we get to our friend Kerry White?
Well, a couple of points, Aaron, and one question that was raised during that meeting in Lewistown was, well, how many homeless people do we have here in Lewistown anyway? And some of the people that were proposing this idea said, well, there's this person and there might be that person. And they came up with, two or three or maybe even four that could have been someone that would utilize a facility like this. And as Senator Bartel pointed out, there's already churches and organizations that are helping out in situations like that. So clearly this proposed project, because of this money that's being dangled out there, is clearly an overblown, overbuilt kind of an idea. Another thing that I'd like to point out that Senator Bartel brought up as well, and I think the mayor of Kalispell came down and shared his time and experience. But he pointed out, I think to a lot of people surprised, that right now these warming shelters are privately funded across the state. The one in Kalispell, one of the major benefactors is the Gianforte Foundation. Okay, so
yeah, very generous.
Yeah, very generous in a lot of cases.
They support the Montana Rescue Mission, Family Promise, I mean, countless organizations.
Correct.
There's Love and Sunshine is this women's shelter for young, unwed, pregnant teenage mothers, for example.
Yeah
a lot of generous support for organizations like that to help people with accountability based in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Senator Bartel made a good point in that these people are doing it voluntarily. These organizations are doing it voluntarily because they want to. And that to apply now for these Medicaid waivers, that then would offload that responsibility onto taxpayers who may not want to, is just wrong. Already, Montana
potentially turn into another welfare state, another welfare program, which is something we have to be very cautious of as well. Representative Schillinger, great to see you. Thanks for dropping into our studios and definitely keep us posted. I did mention this with the governor last week, and he wasn't aware of any funding coming from the state, but he did say that he would look into this situation. How can people, before I get to Carrie White here, how can people comment on this or speak out one way or the other on this topic? I should have asked that to Senator Bartel probably.
Well, I guess one of the ways they can call your show.
That's right, yeah.
I would just encourage him to contact our legislators, say that we're concerned, what do you know about it, but probably more importantly, to reach out to the governor's office, because really, you know, the legislature is out of session, but we're involved in this type of thing virtually every day anyway.
So it's a quieter time, so if you call in and make some noise, it will be heard even more clearly potentially right now.
Yeah, and it's important why I say call the governor's office, because the executive is the one that administers programs and spends or doesn't spend that money that's been appropriated.
Like the DPHHS, that's right.
Yeah.
All right, well, Jerry, thanks for dropping in. Good to see you in person.
Thanks a lot, Aaron.
All right. Well, we are getting somewhat short on time here, and I do want to get our friend, former Representative Carrie White with Citizens for Balanced Use here on the program for sure. Carrie, thanks for waiting there. Apologize for a little bit of a wait, but a lot of important topics to cover here this Monday. Today, apparently, is it still the comment deadline for the proposed Missouri Headwaters Conservation Area?
It is, yeah, November 27th. Senator Daines was able to get another 30 days added. They were going to give us 30 days to comment on a 5.8 million acre land grab, but we got it till today. So I just encourage your listeners to put in your search engine Missouri Headwaters Conservation Area, and it'll come up U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and click on that, go to their site, and there's an email address on there where you can submit comments. And I'm hoping that folks around the state will oppose this land grab down in southwest Montana that's being proposed by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Yeah, and I know when you called in initially about this topic to get this on folks' radar, is basically we're talking about a massive chunk of land in southwest Montana, and the concern is that anytime the federal government comes in, creates any new designation, whatever that designation may be, it then gets used as an excuse to shut down access, to shut down trails, to shut down roads, and to block potential mining activity. And so that's your big concern with this proposed Missouri Headwaters Conservation Area, for those who missed our previous show, right?
Yeah, you know, anytime the federal government comes to help you, we know how that turns out. And it seems like the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service seems to think that they know what's best for southwest Montana. Those folks down there depend on agriculture, mineral resources, timber resources, and especially access for recreation. And most of the projects that are being proposed in the state of Montana, whether it be mining or forestry or even access for recreation, are litigated. If this is designated, it becomes a permanent designation under U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, managed as a wildlife management area. Now, litigation going to court, any kind of activity, the courts are going to look at this as, you can't propose something like this in a wildlife management area. We have to elevate the importance of endangered species, threatened species, any activity, and this includes agricultural activity that may affect some habitat for some animal that the environmentalists feel is important to protect versus, and, you know, they talk about, you talked about what's going on in Lewistown.
Hold that thought for just a second, Kerry White. Hold that thought. We got to take a hard break here. It's our shortest break of the hour, and then hold that thought so we can start there right after this. Yeah, because you're making a very important point about the courts here, too.
.com. Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, back to it here with Kerry White from Citizens for Balanced Use, talking about this proposed Missouri Headwaters Conservation Area. Kerry, I'm with you because I know, you know, supporters of this conservation area proposal will say, look, hey, you know, a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service conservation area boundary itself has no impact on mineral extraction. It's not going to have any, you know, it's not going to have any limitations for this. It's not going to have any limitations for that. But you know as well as I do that facts don't matter. The law doesn't even matter. You get before some of these judges that are in the back pocket of these radical environmental groups, and from a public relations standpoint, they will say, well, you can't do that there. That's near the boundary of a national park, or that's near the boundary of a national monument designation. And it's like, wait a minute, we have boundaries for a reason. And so while you might limit something within the boundaries, they're using the boundary itself and being close to the boundary as now an excuse to limit activity or access. So that's why we're always concerned about any of these types of designations, if you ask me.
Correct. Yeah, correct. I mean, they create these buffer zones around national monuments or national parks, and they limit the activity that can be used within this area. And I just mentioned, briefly about the Lewistown, how the tax dollars are being spent. This will erode the tax base within this 5.8 million acres of this southwest Montana. And it would, a huge tax shift for the burden will go to provide, you know, emergency services, essential services within these counties. That's going to shift onto, you know, municipalities, property owners within that area. When you restrict the development of our resources, I mean, you look what Colstrip did for their community down there, Sweetgrass County and the Stillwater Mine, Jefferson County and the mining that's going on there. It's a huge supporter and contributor to the tax base within those counties. And if you remove that ability to develop those resources, whether it be timber, recreation, mining, agriculture, then you shift that tax burden over to the property owner that's left to pick up the tab. And they just can't survive. And I tell you, when you go to the Missouri Headwaters Conservation Area, just put it in your search engine, go to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and you read their propaganda, how good this is going to be and what it's going to do for the area. You know, really, Aaron, it reminds me of the Tester ads, you know, how much he's done for us over the years that he's been in the Senate when he hasn't done anything for us. And it's just this propaganda to feel good, fluffy stuff out there to make us think that this is the best thing for people in southwest Montana. And the four public meetings that they had down there, there was overwhelming opposition to this. This comes from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Martha Williams, who used to be under Bullock, head of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and along with the Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership and the Nature Conservancy. These are two international environmental groups or national environmental groups coming into southwest Montana and telling the people and the property owners and the ranchers and everybody what's best for them. This was not a ground-up proposal by any means. This is the federal government coming in for a huge land grab and control of this this property down there.
Well, it's interesting, too. You mentioned mining, and we all know that the same people that are pushing electric vehicles that require four times the amount of copper that a normal vehicle would use are the same people that want to block new mines from getting up in operation that would provide that very same type of copper, not to mention some of the rare earth materials at other mines as well. But Tom Luty had an interesting story, a couple of interesting stories for the Billings Gazette right before Thanksgiving. Montana public land leases produced an unexpected $161 million for public schools in the last fiscal year. The biggest boost, the surprise, came from coal. An additional $18 million, I think it was, that unexpectedly came from coal. And yet, in another headline on the same day by Tom Luty, the liberal Montana Supreme Court vacated a coal mine expansion permit for the Rosebud mine. So it's just crazy.
Well, look what the Keystone would have brought into Montana and eastern Montana, and. That being shut down, we shut down our energy sources. Like you said, at the same time, they want us to drive electric vehicles. What do they use to produce wind turbines? What do they use to produce solar panels? All of these minerals. I remember my good friend Conrad Burns. He stated in a committee hearing one time, if you don't grow it or mine it, you don't have it. And if they want to shut down agriculture and they want to shut down resource development, this stuff does not come from thin air.
That's right. It's got to come from the earth. It's got to come out of the dirt. I remember he was telling a story one time. He was in Chicago and Kansas City and these big high-rise skyscrapers with these finance guys and these brokers. And he said, the only reason these big buildings are here is because it had to come from agriculture or mining. It had to come out of the ground. It had to come out of the dirt. That's the only reason you guys are here to broker all this stuff. Right. It was such a great point.
Yep.
Kerry White, thanks for all you do. Thanks for calling in. And, how can people comment? 10 seconds before we go. How can they comment again?
Just punch in your search engine, Missouri Headwaters Conservation Area. Go to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. It'll come right up. And there's an email address in that release.
On that release. Okay, great. Thanks. All right.